What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The stands may be silent, but supporting where you're from has never been so important. Super Value supporting the GAA All-Ireland Football Championship for over 11 years, bringing you the best of GAA conversations.
Welcome along to the Bernard Brogan podcast, brought to you by Super Value, proud sponsors of the 2020 Football All-Ireland Championship. Today is episode 3, and I'm delighted to say I have one of my sporting heroes on the line. Shane Lowry, how are you doing?
Bernard, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm in good form. Are you back home now, or have you any more golf to play?
Yeah, I'm home, and I'm home for I'm home until the new year. So delighted to be home for a few weeks. Anyway, I've been doing a lot of travel. I spend a lot of time away from home and away from the girls. So it's nice to be back and just really chill out for a few weeks, and then kind of look forward to 2021, and let's hope it's better than 2020 anyway.
Yeah, I'd say it was difficult. Did that affect your preparation much in kind of over the summer when you were playing? Obviously, Wendy and Iris would travel the odd time with you when you're doing long stints in the US. Did that affect you this year, do you think?
Yeah, without making too many excuses, I felt like my game was great at the Players, going into the Players' Championship back in March, and then obviously we got called off that week, and then we didn't play till the end of June or something. And I played a lot of golf actually during lockdown. I was in Florida, and golf courses were open. And well, there were the golf course I was a member that was closed for about 5 weeks, so I had that 5 weeks off. But then when I got back, I played a lot of golf and practiced a lot. And to be honest, I probably played and practiced too much leading into my return, and I just struggled to find a bit of form when I came back. And it was difficult, but I felt, you know, it's kind of funny. I felt like I was finding a bit of form at the end of the season, and now another break as well. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is. And I wouldn't be too displeased with my season, but obviously it's kind of, look, I think 2020, apart from the guys who have won the big tournaments or won tournaments, I think the rest of us will be happy to put it behind us and move on, and hopefully, get off to a good start next year. Mm.
Although you didn't bring home the green jacket, and I'm sure you will yet, you did have a nice end to the year with playing one of your heroes, Tiger Woods. What was that like? I know you played with him before, but on Masters weekend.
Yeah, I've actually not played with him before, so that was kind of...
Sorry.
Look, obviously I knew I was going to play with him at some stage, but to get to play with him around Augusta, him as defending champion, or me as the Open champion, was pretty special, pretty cool. And it was a bit daunting. I have no problem saying that. You know, people will probably wonder why I would say that, because, you know, I've been around and on tour so long. But it was a little bit daunting at first, the first few holes of the first round, and probably the reason for my average performance on the first day. But then when I got into it, I played good, and to play with him on Sunday was really nice as well. You know, to play three rounds of him around Augusta, and especially, you know, on the Sunday, you know, I know neither of us had a chance to win the tournament, but we were going out, you know, with the chance of having a decent week. And just to get to be around someone like that, and to see the way he plays the golf course, I'm still trying to figure out in my own head how to play Augusta. Like, I don't think I've really mastered it yet. I played some nice golf there this year. I played a couple of decent rounds, so I was happy with that. I have a few positive thoughts and a bit of an idea going forward to April to how I'm going to try and attack the golf course. But it was a pretty special experience, and something that, you know, I have pictures and I've got videos from it and stuff, I suppose, that I look back on when I'm, you know, when it's all over and I'm finished, and it'll be pretty cool, played with like probably the greatest ever player on the greatest golf course in the world as well, in, you know, arguably one of the greatest tournaments as well.
I think you birdied the hole that he had a 10 on, obviously uncharacteristic hole for Tiger. I know you're always quick with a bit of humour. Did you have to bite your tongue to have a bit of sarcasm with him, or how did it go down?
Yeah, no, I beat him by 8 shots on the 12th, so I don't know if anyone's ever beat 8 shots in a hole before, but there was nothing much said for the next sort of half an hour anyway, but he started to play like Tiger Woods again then on the next hole. He birdied 5 of the last 6, I think. He was unbelievable for the last 6 holes then after that. And it was one of those where you just can't really believe what's happening, you know, in front of you. And didn't really want to say much. My buddy Bo sort of said, I think someone, I said it somewhere recently, but Bo kind of joked, anytime he hit a bad shot or an average drive, he did Joey, his caddy walking off the tee, he said, that's like one of yours, Joey. And then, you know, Bo said to me, he whispered in my ear on the next tee, he said, do you think now is the right time to say to him, I bet you wish Joe played that one. And I was like, I think we better stay quiet and just get on about our business for the next couple of holes. But it was mad. But it was cool to see the way he came back from it, you know. Because to be honest, if the shoe was on the other foot and it was happening to me, I'd probably just want to jump into the river and swim off and get out of there. But the way he came back, and obviously he birdied 5 of the last 6 holes. That's kind of, like I say, he started to play like Tiger Woods then. So that was pretty cool to watch him in full flow around there as well.
I got back. I do want to ask you a couple of things about that performance and a golfer's mindset. But first, I want to go back to Clare. And obviously, last year, you very much put Clare on the map of Ireland, and everyone knew where it was. And what was it like growing up there? And I know your dad and my dad are good pals from their endeavours on the football pitch back in the day. But it was very much a GA household, I'm sure. And golf came second, but very quickly rose through the household, I'm sure.
Yeah, look, a complete GAA household. You know, especially as well, my mum has 10 brothers. not all of them which play GAA, but most of them did. You know, and obviously my dad's family as well. I grew up in Clara, from Forban. So I played football for Clara, he played for Forban. But it was, we lived, and still to this day, we kind of live and bring GAA down there. And, you know, even though Offaly are, you know, we're not going through the best patch, we still love it, and we still go to every game or as many games we can. My dad's heavily involved still and loves it. And just growing up, that's all we wanted to do. All I wanted to do when I was young lad was play football, and all I wanted to do was play for Offaly. And then sort of towards my teenage years, I started to play golf. And quickly, I think I'm just a competitive person. And I quickly realised that I was actually half decent at it. And then when you realise you're half decent at something, you kind of want to become better, don't you? So you kind of keep going. And look, I didn't know that it was going to lead me to where I am today, but it was one of those where I was just trying to go and be as good as I could be and see where it left me. And the years went, I've ended up here, and I'm very fortunate with that. But yeah, it was just growing up in Clara, like we're a football club mainly, not much hurling. Just loved it. Played every sport. I played a bit of soccer, played a bit of everything. You know, anything that was going on. I just love sport in general, and even to this day, that's the way I am. And yeah, it was a great childhood, going to games and going to training at the weekends and playing matches and playing for Clara. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I remember an event we did together, where we had to take a rugby kick off the ground, a GAA kick, a free kick, and then we had to get as close to the post with a golf shot. And we were neck and neck. We both got the rugby kick, we both got the football kick, but the golf, you actually hit the post from 50 yards on the button. Yeah. You're obviously one of those guys that throws your hand at anything and you'd be successful at it. But what turned the gap for you when you were a kid? Was it the hard work and playing golf every day? What really brought you through that level to the next step?
You know, so when I look back at it, Bernard, it was one of those where I just loved the game, like, and I just loved playing it. And I used to play a lot of golf at home. I wouldn't be seen. I'd be quite a social, outgoing person. And, you know, it is a bit of a loner sport, as in, like, when you're growing up where I grew up, and there wasn't many kids that played. Like, I was probably the only kid in my school that played golf. So none of my friends played or anything. I used to go out to Esker Hills on my own. And even my dad didn't play when I started playing. And I used to just love being out there. I mean, and even when I got to sort of my late teenage years, 16, 17, when all the lads were going out, you know, lads be going out to parties and drinking and, you know, acting the idiot or whatever. All I wanted to do was play golf. I was used to sit in on a Saturday night, Friday, Saturday night, clean my golf clubs, watch the golf on TV, go out and I'd play 36 holes on a Sunday. And it just kind of, I just loved it. It was just a pure love for the game. It was nothing about hard work or nothing about, you know, hours spent on the practice. I actually didn't spend any time on the practice ground because we didn't have one in Esker Hills. I used to spend time on the golf course. And yeah, just absolutely loved it. Spent every spare minute I could when I was a teenager playing golf. And like, obviously it's paid off now. I didn't know at the time it was kind of working towards being a professional golfer because I didn't really know what that entailed or know what that was about. But when I look back on it, all that time spent out there definitely is a part of the reason why I am where I am today.
Mm. I was lucky enough earlier this year, your dad invited me down to play in Esker Hills and I got to see firsthand the nooks and crannies and weaves and hills and up and down. Was that kind of where you honed your skills, but the level and different holes in the Esker Hills are a bit of everything. Was that a bit of magic for you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's quite a difficult golf course, especially for a beginner. And I would say the reason, you know, I'm kind of known for my short game. People think, you know, I've got a very good short game and, you know, I've worked very hard and over the years, but worked hard, like whatever, I practiced it, you know, it was when I was a young lad. And because I used to play a lot of golf on my own, I'd have a few balls in my bag and throw them around the greens and I'd just chip it, like trying to chip them in. And if anyone that's played Esker Hills would know, like there's a lot of raised greens. So like where the greens above the level of the ground, where you kind of need to be quite skillful to get the ball up in the air and stop quickly. And I think from doing that, you know, just by pure repetition down there doing that, you know, trying to find the hardest shot I could find and trying to play that. And as well as that, you know, I'm watching Tiger Woods on TV and, you know, on a Friday evening, and then I'm going out on the Saturday and you're trying to kind of replicate what he's been doing. So, you know, I didn't get very many lessons when I was younger. I used to get a few off a guy called Donald McArdle in Tullamore. But it was more, a lot of it that was self-taught. So, yeah, then I met my coach Neil when I was 17 and we kind of hit it off and he's still my coach to this day. So, it just kind of, I think I'm very fortunate the way I learned the game, you know, where I learned it and how I learned it, that I didn't spend a lot of time on the range or do it that way. And I still don't really do it that way to this day. I kind of do my own thing. And I just kind of, it's still a love for the game, that the reason that I play and the reason that I go out and practice. So, you know, I fell in love with the game when I was sort of about 13 or 14 and Esker Hills has a big part to play in my whole, you know, my whole golf and upbringing, I suppose.
Talk to me about what it was like in your house. Obviously, I had a household like that. About your dad, the legends, the 1982. What was that like for you growing up? Were you very aware of that Offaly, that great team, and what they did in 82?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I was too aware of how big a deal that was when I was growing up. Look, I knew my dad. Like, my dad finished playing for Offaly in 93, I think. So I was only six. And then he probably finished playing club football a year later. So I was still young when he was playing. So I don't really... I do remember going to games with him. And I do remember, you know, being around GA. And I knew he was, quite good or half decent. And but I suppose as the years went on, you sort of see what people actually make of it. And only kind of up to last year, when you're seeing what the Dubs did and actually did the five in a row, how big a deal it was for Offaly to stop that back in 82 and how big a deal it was for my dad to be a part of that. So you kind of see it now more so than I did back then when I was growing up. But yeah, we were pure G household. So it was kind of, that's all we did. And I do remember going to dad's games and my uncle's games when I was younger, and it was all I wanted to do. And even when my dad managed Westmead in the late 90s, and all I did, like I just used to hang out with my dad. Like I go and went everywhere with him, like went to, you know, matches, I just went everywhere with him, went to training and everything with him. And that's how I grew up.
How have you found, have you been watching the, or keeping an eye on the 2020 Championship this year?
Oh, geez, yeah. see, it's great. It's great for us in, we're in America. We get the matches in the mornings, you know what I mean? So my goal, it's funny, right? So my goal every week is, obviously there's matches on a Saturday and Sunday. And my goal every week is to play well on Thursday and Friday so I can get a late tea time on Saturday and Sunday so I can watch the GA in the mornings. It's nothing to do with doing well in the tournament. But yeah, it's been you know, for the year that's in it, it's been pretty good. Obviously, I think the last couple of weekends have been you know, extraordinary. When you see what the GA does to some people, and I think last weekend especially, or you know, the weekend before last, the football provincial finals. You know, obviously the Dubs beat Mead. That was a kind of a given. But when you see what it meant to the Cavan people to beat Donegal, and what it meant to Tipperary to beat Cork and to win that, and it's just incredible what it does. And obviously, look, the hurling's been brilliant as well. So yeah, I love it. Like I have GA go and I have the matches on the house all the time. We rent houses, so I've got a bit of a dodgy box as well that I hook up to the TV and I get the games on. And yeah, so everything on my Thursday and Friday revolves around what time the games are on at the weekend.
Brilliant, fair play. Your pal Huey would have been delighted, obviously, with the Cavan victory.
Yeah.
Any hope for him against the Dubs or even Tip on the other side? What do you see?
Well, I'm not much of a GA pundit, but I think, to be honest, I think Tipperary might throw the kitchen sink at Mayo and they might give them a good going over. Funny, my Robbie Cannon, who I go to for strength and condition, is the strength and condition coach of the Tip footballer. So he's a very happy man at the minute. I'm just back. I was out there this morning, so he's buzzing. It's you know, All-Ireland semi-final week, and he lives down beside Croker, and he's like thinking about, you know, being able to walk down to Croker to go to a game that he's, you know, he's involved with during the All-Ireland semi-final is pretty cool for him. Obviously, look, nobody gives Cavan much of a chance. I think the Dubs, even though they haven't really, you know, they haven't been tested a whole lot yet, I think they look like they're flying. You know, the bits and pieces. I didn't actually see the Mi game. Only on the Sunday game, the highlights, but the bits and pieces that I did see, they look like they're flying. Like, you know, they look like they're on a mission. Kieran Kilkenny looks like he's on a mission to win Footballer of the Year. Brian Fenton is as good as ever, isn't he? They're just, you know yourself, Bernard, they're just so good. And I, to be honest, I'll probably get a bit of stick off the Mayo crowd, but I find it very hard to see anyone even coming close to them in the next two games.
When you say there about the emotion for the Tipperary 80 years, 85 years since they won it, you walking up that the emotion of the Open last year and 17th hole, 18th hole, what was that like for you? Like, been in a unique position that you actually, I know you had to get it done, but you were more or less there once it went off the tee in the 18th, we were all more or less comfortable, you get the job done. But what was that like?
Look, Bernard, it was something that, you know, something that it's hard to describe how I felt, you know, to get to do that, you know, in front of my home crowd, in front of my family and friends and achieve something like that. And I, it's funny, I mentioned there that Robbie, who I train with, trains the Tip footballers, and I was talking to him, you know, I was in with him last week and we were chatting, you know, Monday, Tuesday, I go into him every day. And I was just saying to him, you know, even no matter what happens for them lads now for the rest of the year, even, you know, even if they go out and get beaten by Mayo, I know they won't be too happy. But at the end of the day, they really should enjoy this because sport and you know yourself, Bernard, like you're obviously very lucky to have been quite successful with the Dubs over the last number of years. But sport is tough at times. And when you get something good happen to you in sport, you really need to kind of sit back and enjoy it and take it all in. And I know like the likes of the Tip footballers they'll be there, and all they'll want to do is not think about the Munster final and think about the All-Ireland semi-final. But for me, I would say like this is just the way I see sport and the way I see it. This is what I do. Like, I just think they should really just enjoy it and embrace it and look, go out and be their best the next day. And that's what I've done. And like, I got to achieve something that, look, when I grew up in Clara when I was younger, like, you couldn't even, he couldn't even envisage something like that. You know what I mean? And I got to actually live something like that, and you know, bringing the Clara joke down to Clara, just you know, it was one of the only times I actually got emotional with stepping off the bus in Clara and seeing thousands of people there just for me, like, and something that you put a smile on people's faces. So yeah, it was one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to me. It was, you know, I'm very driven and very focused on doing something like that again. But I always say that if it doesn't happen, look, I always have that. And that's not me. You know, people, the outsider looking in might say, you know, you're not very ambitious, or, you know, you need to work harder and fight harder for, you know, to achieve something like that again. But, and I do, like, I work every day to go and achieve as much as I can in this game. I know I'm not stupid. Like, I know that it's hard to be successful in professional sport. So when you do something amazing and something like that, you really need to kind of embrace it and enjoy it, and you know, realize that things like this don't come around every day. And that's the kind of thing I was getting into with the TIP footballers. Mm. Like, you know, at the start of the year, they're in Division 3. Like, I was actually, before the last lockdown, I was going to go down and watch Offaly playing against them in Semple Stadium. Robbie was going to get me tickets. Like, you know, they're playing Division 3 football not long ago, and now they're in All Ireland semi-final. So they really should embrace this and really enjoy it. And look, throw the kitchen sink at Mayo and see what I get you. Because if you get to an All Ireland final, it'd be unbelievable for them. But yeah. Sorry, yeah. I went off on a bit of a rant.
No, you're dead right. What stuck with me there is, you say you always play with a smile. You're such a likable character in the globally on the tour because of that and your demeanor. But that works for you psychologically and from a mindset point of view as well. And you talk about the TIP guys out there going out and enjoying it. I've always played my best sport when I've tried to just go out and enjoy myself. Not always the easiest thing to think about when a big game's coming up. But is that the mentality you've always taken? Is play with a smile and just enjoy it and it will figure itself out.
Yeah, I try to. It's, you know, it's hard at times. When things are not going well, it's harder to do, obviously. But when I we go back to Masters, it was only a couple of weeks ago, and I get drawn with Tiger, and I'm like, I kind of would prefer not to be drawn with him the first two rounds, because I kind of would like to go in under the radar a little bit and try and go about my business my own way. But I'm here now, I'm like, and then when I kind of take a step back and look at this, and I go, right, Shane, you're the Open champion. Tiger Woods is the defending champion. He's the greatest golfer of all time. We're in Augusta at the Masters, you know, and you're going out to play within the first two rounds. This is something that you can only enjoy. Like, this is something that you can only look at and go, wow, this is amazing. And that's not me, you know. Psychologists or other people would say that you really need to go out and focus on your own game, not worry about who you're playing with. It doesn't matter who you're paired with. But at the end of the day, like, it's Tiger Woods, so it does, in my opinion. And I'm very, you know, when I'm nervous and when I'm, you know, when things are not going well or when things are going well, I'm very kind of, I'm outspoken about how I feel and stuff like that. So that's kind of the way I look at things. And, you know, when I'm nervous, like, you know, even if it's only on a Friday afternoon to make a cut, because you do get nervous, like, in at certain times when you probably shouldn't be nervous, you do get nervous. And I would say to the ball, like, I'm shitting myself here. Like, I'm, you know, and I've been successful enough in this game to not worry about making cuts. But at the end of the day, you still do worry about making cuts. You still want to play weekends and you still want to be, you know, do as best you can. So, yeah, I try and live my life and my life in general about just going out and being the best I can be every day. And enjoying that. And if I do that, I know I'll do half decent at the game, and I know I'll make a decent living for me and my family. And that's kind of how I feel about it. And when I'm 50 and finished, or whenever I'm finished this game, if I look back on it and go, right, well, I've given it everything I can, and I've had a good time along the way, you know, I'll be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, fair play. And breakdowns for all of the average and poor golfers like me out there, when you're going through, I'm always amazed at the mindset when you maybe do make a bad shot, how you can just brush it aside and get on with it. How do you actually approach a mistake or when you're in that flow? How does that work for you? Do you just leave the mistake behind and just get on to the next shot, or you're obviously have to leave those behind you?
Yeah, look, so the thing is for me, and I would say that I'm better at it than I was a few years ago, but I'm still not great at it. I would say, you know, I'm lucky I have a caddy to kind of talk to and do that type of stuff. So you work it out amongst yourselves. You know, especially when I'm on a big run of tournaments towards the end, when you're getting kind of a bit fatigued and a bit kind of narky, it's harder than other times. So, you go out, you're trying your hardest over every shot. So, I've tried to, I'm over a shot. I've tried to hit a good shot. I didn't mean hit a bad shot. So you just kind of have to move on and deal with what you're given. There's nothing you can do to change that. So it's all about moving on. And even, I would say that even I'm a bit of a, as well as like on the other hand, when I'm playing really well, I can get a bit complacent. So it's just all about, you know, leaving whatever shot you've hit, whether good, bad or indifferent behind you and getting on to the next shot and just playing that, you know, because even when you're playing really well and you get complacent, you know, you start to become sloppy. So you really want to just focus in on one shot at a time. It's kind of, I don't really like the golf cliches too much, but that's one thing that really, really does work. Like if you just try and focus on one shot at a time and add them up at the end of the day, and like I said, know that you've given it 100% that day, sure, just literally like there's nothing more you can do. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
Jim Gavin would love that. That's in the process, as he calls it, very much so.
Yeah.
When you come out of 2000, obviously winning the Open, amazing, and the celebrations and Clara was unbelievable. How has your mindset shifted since then? Obviously, the celebrations went on and were brilliant. But do you have a new sense of confidence, or is it the same, just getting after the same things, or is the comfort of having the access to big tournaments, is that change your mindset about how you're approaching golf?
Yeah, it's it's funny, like since I won the Open, if you had said to me the week before the Open, right, you're going to win the Open next week, and do you think it'll change you as a golfer and as a person? And I would have been like, you know, it'll probably change my mindset a little bit, you know, I'll probably feel different going to tournament. But, you know, at the end of the day, I came out of last year and I sat down at the end of the year and I was like, I really don't feel like, you know, a much different golfer than I was 6 months ago or the week before the Open. I feel like I'm the same person, the same golfer that I was. Obviously, I've been very fortunate to win that and I've got the confidence going forward that I know no matter what position I put myself in that I'm going to be able to handle the pressure. At the end of the day, I don't think, in my personal opinion, people might disagree with me, but this is just how I feel. I don't think that I'll be put in a more high-pressure situation than that forever again for the rest of my life, for the rest of my career, you know, in golf circumstances. Going out with a four-shot lead in the final round of the Open, in your home country with whatever many thousand people there, kind of, you know, if I didn't win that day, it would have been all sorts of, it would have been a serious letdown. So, the pressure that I kind of, that I took on that day and got through, can only give me confidence going forward. So I don't think I'm a different golfer, a different person, but a little bit more of a confident person going forward. Look, I haven't had the season I would have liked this year. But that's golf. I've had average seasons and bad seasons in the past, and I know that every day, every year is going to be different. But at the end of the day, the way I do it, as long as I'm comfortable in everything that I'm doing, and give it 100%, there's nothing more I can do. I keep harping on and keep saying that, but that's just the way I go about it. Like I'm obviously more confident when I get into high pressured situations now and going forward, and it doesn't matter where you put me, I'll be pretty, you know, I might not be comfortable, but I'll be comfortable-ish in those situations.
Coming into that to the Open, was there anything? I'm always searching for that flow state of where you're in games and it's working for you, and you obviously had that weekend. Do you ever look back and say, "Oh, should I kind of recreate that? What was my preparation like? What was different that week, that weekend, and maybe other weekends?"
Yeah, so when I look back on it, I was actually probably in the form of my life coming into the Open. I didn't think about it. I didn't think it at the time. Like I had played, so I'd missed the cut at the Masters, and then I finished third the following week in Hilton Head. Then at the US Open, I had a really bad first round and finished about 25th, which was, I was pretty good for the, at the USPGA, I'd finished eighth after shooting a really bad first round. I finished second in Canada, and then I had a really bad first round at the US Open, and I finished about 25th. So, and then I went to the Irish Open in Lahinch, and I felt like my game was really good. I finished about 30th, but I really did feel like my game was really good. And, I kind of looked at those other two majors that I played that year. And if I didn't, I mean, ifs and buts or whatever, hindsight, but if I had shot level par in both those rounds, I think I would have finished about top five in those two majors. So for the last three rounds in those two majors, I was one of the better players. And I didn't think about that before it. But when I look back on it, that's kind of the way it was. And I went up to Portrush with not a whole lot of expectation. Look, I expected to do well and I wanted to do well, but not a whole lot. I knew that it was going to be the Rory show that week. I knew everyone was going to be talking about Rory and that's all it was going to be about. He had made such a big deal of it that, and look, it was a big deal. And I knew it was going to be about that. So I knew I could kind of come in under the radar, try and shoot a couple of decent scores and find myself thereabouts on Saturday. I loved Portrush. I knew the golf course really well. But like I had a, Wednesday afternoon, I went out to play a few holes with GMAC and I think we played about 7 or 8 holes and I felt like I was playing awful. Like I was kind of in a, we call it like a major meltdown. We always, you always go through it the week of a major. You have a bit of a head off and a bit of a, a bitch and moan to your coach. But it's kind of good to have that. On the other hand, I almost dislike when I'm feeling really good about my game going into it, because then my expectation hires and, I feel like I'm, I get into that kind of complacent mode where I'm expecting to go out and shoot, a good score. Whereas when I'm a bit anxious is when I'm at my best, because it kind of focuses me in more on targets and what my job is. But as regards preparation, how I did it, I don't think I did it any different than any other week. It just so happened that I went out there and played the golf of my life. And I knew I could go there under the radar, try and shoot a couple of decent scores. And before I knew it, I was leading the tournament on Friday. And then I kind of never looked back after that. I kicked on for the rest of the weekend. But when I look back on it, about 3 months beforehand, I was probably playing the golf of my life. And I just hadn't had the perfect results, but I was very fortunate that the perfect result happened that weekend. Because the way I look at it in golf, right? And this is the way I look at it. This is the way I look at golf. For me, like people, the top players, the top five in the world, say the Rorys and Dustins and these guys, they try and peak their games for majors. But I don't think personally that I can do that. I just think that I need to just go out and be the best I can be on any given day. And I just have to be fortunate when it happens, because, and I said this after the Masters, you look at Dustin Johnson shooting 20 under around there for 4 rounds and, winning by loads. I said it afterwards and I've no bother saying this. If I went out there and brought my A game and played as best I could and got every break I could, I couldn't have beaten Dustin Johnson that week, because that's just the way it is. He's a better golfer than me. He's the world number one. And I'm not saying that when I get put in a back nine on Sunday against him, if we're tied for the lead, that I can't beat him. I know I can. But the fact that he brings his A game, I don't think the best golfer, the top two or three, him and Rory, I would put there, maybe a couple of others, that if they bring their A game, they can't be beaten. So it's, everything went right for me in Portrush. Like I rocked up, I had my A game, I played as best I could. It was the perfect week. Lynx golf suits me down to the ground. It's kind of a bit of a leveler when it comes to the top of the world golf. Some guys can handle it, some guys can't. So as regards preparation and stuff, I don't really know if I did anything different. And I've tried to think about it and tried to look back and what did I do. you know, I don't think I did anything different than what I would do in a normal week. And but it just all clicked, and I'm very fortunate. And that's why I always say I feel very fortunate to have achieved that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm lucky, because years of hard work has went into it. It's not pure luck. It's obviously skill and hard work and determination and all of the above. But a bit of luck has to come into it as well.
Yeah. I've actually never heard an athlete say, or a sports person say, they figured out how to get into their flow state and they had it licked, because that would be a perfect solution if they had. Well, 2021.
Bottle it and sell it.
Yeah, you sell it, exactly. 2021, what's it going to look like for you? How are you approaching it? Are you're kicking off early in the new year, or what's the plans?
Yeah, I haven't got my full schedule. Like, I'm gonna start off in the Middle East in January, try and pick up a few Ryder Cup points. That's my number one goal for the next sort of 7 or 8 months. So I'll start off in the Middle East, and then I'll get back to the States end of January, early February, and kick off my season over there. So it's I'm already looking forward to that. Look, I'm taking a few weeks off golf, but I'm trying to train as much as I can and just get ready for what 2021 is going to bring. So I'll start in the Middle East. Ryder Cup is the big thing for me, and I've been very vocal about it. I've been, you know, not shy of saying it, and, you know, I'm probably putting pressure on myself to make it. But I think if I do everything I can and play as good as I can, I should make the team. That's just the confidence I have in myself.
I always ask myself that question about you when I'm thinking about the Ryder Cup. Obviously, I'd love to see you out there. Is that sport and that GA background or that team mentality? I think you try.
I think so, Bernard. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think I just, you know, I always see, look, I'm very lucky to have the job I do and make the living I do from it. But I see teams, you know, and I see the enjoyment people have after winning something, or even just the day-to-day training and being together all the time and the crack they probably have. I think I'd love that, you know. So I'd love to get that for 1 week a year, anywhere, or 1 week every 2 years. That'd be pretty cool to have that. And, you know, I think I would kind of thrive in that environment. So if Porrick is listening, I'm just kind of putting my best foot forward here. I think I'd be pretty good in the team room. And to be honest, I think, look, I wouldn't be a professional golfer if I didn't sit here and think that I'm good enough to make the team or good enough to play. So we'll see how it goes. I'll give my best for the next sort of 7 or 8 months, and hopefully I'm on that plane to Wisconsin.
I'm sure you'll take it out of Porrick's hands, but you will have a nation lobbying for you with Porrick Harrington to make sure you're on it, because we know you thrive in that environment. Before we finish up, the next few weeks, you're just enjoying Christmas. You're going to enjoy the rest of the championship. A nod to the hurlers as well. Our pal Joe Canning got a knock, but we hear he's in better form. But you're looking forward to the next couple of games, next couple of weekends?
Yeah, I'm very excited. Like, I was very excited for that Galway and Limerick game at the weekend there. And obviously I know Joe fairly well. So I was half shouting for Galway, but you know, he got a bad knock at the end. Luckily he's all right. But it's an exciting couple of weeks, isn't it? It's great to have Christmas. It's great that we're kind of coming out of lockdown. It's great to have the All Ireland finals, semi final and finals. So it'll be an exciting few weeks, even though, you know, I'd give anything to get to Croker for a few games or for things to be some sort of normal. But yeah, I'm just chilling out with my family for the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a quieter Christmas than last year, which is nice. You know, and I feel like, to be honest, I feel like this Christmas will give myself, I'll have more of an opportunity to kind of focus on me and focus on getting ready for 2021. So that's kind of, that's what I want out of this Christmas, as opposed to anything else. I've Christmas is past. I've sort of laid, I've put down the tools for the whole Christmas, and then you kind of come back out in January a bit sluggish and a bit slow to get started. So I'm looking forward to kind of working as hard as I can this Christmas and hitting the ground running then in 2021. And obviously at the weekend we've got the GA, which is very exciting. You know, I think the All-Ireland Final will be a cracker, and Waterford have a great chance to do something very special. And obviously, the two football semi-finals will be will be interesting. You know, everyone thinks it'll probably be a Dublin Mayo final, and then it'll be very interesting again. You know, 2020, I was half thinking yesterday it'd be funny if, wouldn't be funny for the Dubs or Limerick, but it'd be funny if it was a Waterford Mayo double this year, after everything that's going on, after going on in 2020.
You never know the way things are going. Shane, thanks a million for your time. I know next year is a big year for you. We wish you all the best of luck. Hopefully catch you maybe over Christmas for a pint of Guinness, please God.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
But thanks a million
for
your
time. I'll see you over Christmas,
yeah. Thank you very much for tuning in to episode 3 of the Bernard Brogan podcast. Our special guest this week was Shane Lowry, and as always, thanks to Super Value, proud sponsors of the 2020 All-Ireland Football Championship. Next week, we'll have my good friend and comrade, Jack McCaffrey, joining me. So tune into that. Please check out OTB GAA to get the podcast.
This conversation was brought to you by Super Value, proud sponsors of the GAA All-Ireland Football Championship for over 11 years.